Hello, friends, and welcome to Talk To Me, episode 15. On this episode, I talk to the Reverend Horton Heat, such a legendary guitar player. It's an honor to have him on the podcast. Special Thanksgiving episode. Gotta say thanks to all the people that have been listening to the podcast. Thanks to everyone who has been downloading the podcast, spreading the word, letting everyone know about the podcast. Thanks to all the metal sites that have been using the podcast for story content. Gotta give a nice, huge thanks to Joel Baggett, or Joel Baget, if that's how you say it. He stepped up, helped out the podcast greatly on the PayPal account. If you want to donate to the podcast, if you're in the donating spirit of the season, go to paypal.me/talktome. paypal.me/talktome. Donate a couple bucks. Help with production cost. Help keep the podcast free and help it keep going. Huge announcement on this podcast. This Wednesday, I will be the guest on Thrifty Business with Jay and A. Check your YouTube listings for that. It's at 9 o'clock Eastern Time. So guesting on Thrifty Business with J&A. This episode with the Reverend Horton Heat is pretty awesome. It was a great time to get to chat with the legendary Reverend Horton Heat. Always been a huge fan of the band. Got to see him many times. I'm going to start this podcast out with a huge thank you to my friend Jeremy Owsley for helping me out getting the Reverend Horton Heat on the podcast. His father, Lynn Owsley, is in the Steel Guitar Hall of Fame. He put out a solo record in 2004. The Reverend Horton Heat sang on this track, and Lynn was great enough to let me throw it on the podcast. So here's some Lynn Owsley with guest Reverend Horton Heat. I'll see you guys in a minute.
A lot. I got a broken heart, and that's all I've got. You made me cry, and I cried a lot. I lost your love, baby, thanks a lot. You told our friends as I was passing by that you're not sorry that he made me cry. You said I deserve just what I got. Well, if that's how you feel, honey, thanks a lot. Thanks. Thanks a lot. I got a broken heart, and that's all I've got. You made me cry, and I cried a lot. I lost your love, honey, thanks a lot. God is a broken heart. We loved a little and we laughed a lot. Then you were gone, honey, thanks a lot. Thanks. Thanks a lot. I got a broken heart, and that's all I've got. You made me cry, and I cried a lot. I lost your love, honey, thanks a lot.
Definitely mixing it up on the podcast this week, aren't we? It's not a metal band, it's not a hardcore band. Just going back to the roots, because we play both kinds of music here on the Talk To Me podcast, country and western. Little info on the track. It's from the record, Elaine Again, A Stealing Tribute to Ernest Tubb. It's available at the Ernest Tubb Record Shops, and it's also available at lynnowsley.com. That's LYNNOWSLEY.com. So go check it out. Go get you the Lynn Owsley CD. If he's coming through your town, make sure to go check him out. This conversation with the Reverend Ornead is a nice one. It's fun. It was a fun conversation. We go into a lot of things. Rockabilly, Johnny Cash. He even talks about Pantera back in the day, opening for White Zombie, all that fun stuff. So, without any more of your time wasted, here's my conversation with the Reverend Horton Heat. First off, I just kind of wanted to hit you, go on the old Wayback Machine, and when I first saw you guys kind of, you know, in the mid-90s with, like, White Zombie and those things, how was touring with those guys back then, like, being in a rockabilly band, opening for such a huge metal band?
Well, it was flattering, you know, and the thing about us, though, we have such a diverse crowd, you know, we go in and we play for metal people sometimes, you know,
yeah.
But, you know, a lot of our, I guess what it is basically, though, a lot is that, you know, a lot of the rooms we go into, you know, here and there across America, it's rock and roll. So a lot of those, you know, metal people are there. And so, but honestly, it was just super flattering. They were pretty big at that point.
Yeah, that was a huge tour at that time, yeah.
Yeah, and so, you know, to get to see it all up close and make some great old friends and have a few stories here and there. It's pretty neat.
That's awesome. Are you guys still seeing like White Zombie shirts at your shows, even, you know, 20 years later?
Well, you know what? We see so much of everything, but yeah, I think I do talk to a lot of people, but that's the first time they saw us.
Mm-hmm. You know, retrospect.
And really, though, you know, you got to give Rob Zombie credit because for having us on that trip. Because, I mean, you know, it was, you know, for him to completely do, it's not really a total 180, but to veer way off and have a band like us play in front of his crowd, I think he's a really cool guy.
No, that was such a, you know, just an eclectic build to begin with because, you know, it was you guys and the Melvins and White Zombie. So it was definitely an eclectic bill, but
were great.
Oh, it was such a great, yeah. That was just such a great show. I got to catch it, you know, at the Starwood Amphitheater in Nashville. So it was such a great show to see. But I mean, looking back at it in retrospect, you know, having you guys on that show now really doesn't seem that crazy. But back then, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah. Huh. Well, yep. Well, we've done a lot of that. You know, we did a big tour with Soundgarden.
Yeah.
And, you know, did tours with that was kind of a different audience for their opening people, so it was cool they had us on that. But we play for a lot of different types of people.
But you think too, it has a lot to do with the fact that there's not now I believe there's like a huge resurgence of like the rockabilly crowd, but I mean in the mid '90s, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of bands necessarily for you guys to tour with. Would that be part of it too?
Well, kind of. In the 90s, you know, what we always did, we kind of would veer off a little bit, too. Of course, we've had some of the best rockabilly bands in the world, you know, on bills that we've been on and had them open up and opened up for them over the years. But, you know, we would veer off, too. So, you know, we'd always have, you know, the Super Suckers was a little bit different from the rockabilly crowd, and Nashville Pussy was a little bit different than the rockabilly crowd. And, you know, and and back then, you know, I don't know, you know, it's just a long, strange trip, man. I just don't even know how to describe all this. But, you know, at the end of the day, man, I'm just a musician. I can't think about what band is going to open up for me every day because, for one thing, that's a full-time job for me, thinking about who's going to open up for us, because you have to kind of sell a package to these promoters. You know, promoters are, you know, they're the front lines of the music business. You know, that they want a show. You know, that just having Reverend Horton Heat play is fine, or whatever band play is fine, but they would prefer to have something go on that's an event, you know? And so, you know, I could put a lot of bands that I think are some of the best bands in the world, and I have, and will probably still go try for it. But man, the powers that be, you know, if you can't sell tickets, it's a tough world.
Right.
You know,
I'll kind of give you a quick story, but growing up, my mom was huge into like Motley Crue and like the '80s bands and stuff. And I was like, this guy, Jerry Lee Lewis, is the man, you know. And I'm like 10 years old buying Jerry Lee Lewis cassettes, and she's buying, you know, Girls, Girls, Girls and cassette, looking at me like I'm crazy. You know, I'm looking at her like she's crazy. And then, but you know, later on in life, I loved, still to this day. And I still think it's funny that he's pretty much outlived all of them, you know.
Right, because nobody would have believed that back in 1960.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah.
But yeah, I loved all that stuff. You know, my, and then also growing up in Nashville too, you get the, you know, like my friend Jeremy, who helped me get you on the podcast, his dad, Lynn Owsley, huge, you know, huge steel guitar player, huge, you know, Texas troubadour, played with Ernest Tubb. Uh-huh. You know, everyone's dad or everyone's uncle was in a country band at some point. You just kind of grew up around it, and it's such a great stuff.
Wow. Yeah, Nashville's a very interesting place. It's a one-of-a-kind type of a town to have all that music heritage there. It's pretty cool.
Such a great place. And plus, and then I think the point I was trying to make was, you guys came along in a time where, you know, I was hugely into Metallica and Megadeth and Pantera, but I still had that kid inside of me that loved Jerry Lee Lewis and early Elvis and Johnny Cash. So, you know, it was just such a good time for you guys to come along, just for me personally.
Well, hey, man, thanks a lot. Well, I appreciate that very much. It's really, really awesome. It sounds like you kind of parallel what I did. You know, when I was a kid, I kind of left on my cousins were playing Johnny Cash and Creedence Clearwater Revival, Carl Perkins, you know, and so that was when I was really pretty, you know, kind of just figuring out, you know, what music was about, you know, 10 years old or something.
Right.
But, you know, I kind of graduated and went through these phases. I really latched onto the roots thing, blues, rockabilly and all that, of course. But, you know, I liked rock and roll too. I was a rock and roll guy. So, and plus finding other, you know, 16-year-old kids to start a blues band.
Right.
Not really something that was almost even possible. You know, but you know, I played rock and roll. I played with a lot of band, kind of crazy, goofy, little bit goofy bands, you know, to build my chops as a musician and to have fun and play music, you know. So I'm lucky I get to do what I want to do now, you know.
Oh, that's such a great thing. How did you and Jimbo meet?
Well, he came to a gig. I had another bass player before Jimbo for a few years. Mm-hmm. And he played stand-up bass. And back then, it was such a novelty that, you know, I'm sure before Jimbo had ever heard about, I think probably one of the first things he might have heard is, hey, yeah, there's this band, they have an upright bass player. Because he was like one of the only other upright bass players that played in kind of alternative rockabilly bands in Texas. He lives in a band called the Teddy Boys and in a band called Six Gun in Houston. And so I'd seen the Teddy Boys. I don't remember, you know, I really didn't remember focusing on Jimbo or not. It might have been a different guy at that point. But anyway, eventually he came to one of the gigs, met him. He got up there to slap the bass, and he was doing this triple slap, almost triple slap, but a really good double slap, kind of a rumba upright bass thing. And I was like, oh, man, this guy. I thought, man, that's a pretty cool thing to be playing first thing off there, buddy. I snuck over and got his number. And about 6 months later, my bass player, Jack, quit. And I had that number, and I called up Jimbo. And within 2 days, he had quit his job, moved to Dallas, and we were rehearsing for to make living where he'd go.
Oh, wow.
But he, anyway, I get long-winded. I get off the subject when I'm...
No, I mean, that's what the podcast is for. The podcast is just open conversation and you talk about whatever.
Well, you know, you're getting it, man.
You know, with the band getting together and, you know, putting out records and things like that, who are like some of your heroes from when you were a kid listening to like the rockabilly and stuff like that, that you've gotten to play with over the years and maybe gotten up with you at shows?
Well, that was, you know, like I said, you know, Johnny Cash, I was the first song I ever tried to learn on guitar when I was about 6 years old was Folsom Prison Blues, you know, and then Elvis was so big and such, he was like Justin Bieber,
right?
You know, it wasn't really that cool to like Elvis, even though we liked his songs, his early songs, and they were all there, all kind of there, but she turned me on, my sister really liked Elvis, and of course that, she had this Elvis. She went out and bought an Elvis album. You know, I was probably a little too cool to go do that at that point. I was out buying some, you know, Black Sabbath album. I don't know what I was buying, but but speaking of the metal thing, you know, I was, you know, eventually as I grew up, I started hanging around the other kids, and you know, started listening to Black Sabbath and Led Zeppelin and you know, buying the songs that were coming out at that time. You know, ZZ Top was huge in Texas, and of course they were right up my alley. That kind of was leading me into the blues even more. But I was just a kid riding my bike, going to buy an Alice Cooper album or Black Sabbath or something, and I went to this record store. Man, they had so much blues. It was. And the guy was playing Howlin' Wolf, Sonny Boy Williamson in there, and it was just, I was thinking, man, that's real stuff there. I just fell in love with it, and that kind of, you know, solidified my whole deal into the 50s. I was in a 50s band, and started just, you know, hanging around record collectors and people that knew about the extensive nature of rockabilly. You know, and I mean, man, it's hundreds of labels with thousands of artists, and there's a lot of great stuff out there.
Yeah, you definitely have to dig through. You have to dig through a lot to get through it.
Yeah, you know, but at the same time, you know, I don't want to be snobbish about the greats, because the greats, you know, they're up there. Elvis Presley, Gene Vincent, the Blue Cabs, Eddie Cochran, Jerry Lee Lewis, you know, those... That's some cool music, man. That's my favorite. See, I like the Louisiana rock and roll stuff a lot too. Or specialty records, Little Richard, Larry Williams, Lloyd Price, Smiley Lewis. Stuff's great.
That's anyway. Awesome. Quick story with my son. I have a 1-year-old, and he ever since he's been born, you know, he loves music. He'll loves to dance around, but. You throw in some Elvis, and he will immediately stop crying. He will just listen. I don't know what it is. And it could be any era Elvis. You know, you put on Johnny Cash, he might get into it or something like that. But any era Elvis, he just knows that voice already and just immediately soothing.
That's cool.
It's so cool to watch him just enjoy listening to music. But
now, how old is he?
He just turned 1, yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, cool. Well, congratulations.
Thanks.
You're going to have a really good time with that.
Oh yeah. Well, my kids are,
do you have,
yeah,
is this your first kid?
No. I have 13, 10 and 1. So we took a break in there.
13, 10, 1. Wow. Well,
yeah.
I've got you beat on that. I've got you beat on that. I've got an 8-year-old and I've got a 13-year-old and I've got a 31-year-old.
Wow. That's definitely a stretch.
So I that's a stretch, but no.
Yeah, talking about
congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. Talking about trying to explain how popular Elvis was to my 13-year-old daughter is like, you know, you're One Direction and you're Justin Bieber and all that, you can just put that aside. I mean, this was the guy, you know, trying to explain that to her. But
yeah, so yeah, but man, the greats were there, you know, Elvis. Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny, though. I was just thinking about this. My little daughter, when she was about, I don't remember, she was really young, maybe about 5 or 6, 5 maybe. We were driving to listen to Johnny Cash, and Ring of Fire came on.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "Daddy, you know, because it's got the Mexican horns, of you know, that deal." And she goes, "Daddy, this song is kind of Mexican, and it's kind of country western, isn't it?" I was like, whew, man, she just blew my mind when she said that. I was like, going, how did you figure that out?
Right. That's so great. So just kind of getting back to Texas, and I've toured and played in bands, you know, since seeing you guys. I went on to play my own stuff, played music, toured, and all that fun stuff. But, like, you could literally tour Texas and make a career out of it. You know, there are so many stops, and Texas is so big. Like, I feel like you could literally book an entire Texas tour and be gone for a year.
Well, you know what? We do play a lot in Texas, but mm-hmm. at the same time, you know, our hometown Dallas, we kind of have been treating this kind of like it was a tour stop for decades almost now, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but, you know, at the same time, gigs keep coming through, you know. So we play in Texas a lot, yeah. Well, the fun thing about us, though, is we will kind of change around our set and go do different little gigs if it's easier for us to get to.
Yeah.
And we can go play and make a little money and not have to be, you know, on the tour bus the whole time, you know, or on a big tour. I like a tour bus, but, you know, then we'll go and we'll play and change our set up a little bit. You mm-hmm. know, we'll go and play, you know, a straight up country room or a, you know, different kind of rock and roll type room or whatever. And, you know, change up a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
Not much, but, you know, just enough so where it's a fun gig. And it gives us something a little bit different to do. So sometimes when we play around Dallas, or especially around where I live, we have to get a little more country.
Nice. There was one of the last tours I did, a singer and I, were we were in Laredo, Texas, and the hotel pool was outside, and you know, we jumped the fence, just being young and dumb, and we jumped the fence, get in, we're just swimming and all, and then the security guard comes over, and he's like yelling at us, but it's in Spanish, and we're just like, we don't know what he's saying, and finally, he's like, La Policia, and we're like, No Policia, you know, we jump back over the fence.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it was just, I always think about that, like, No Policia.
Oh, man, yeah, he thought you were the police or something, huh?
No, I think he was going to call the police for us, you know, being in the pool after hours or something silly, I don't know.
I was going to say, oh, I see, how old were you?
How old was I then? You know, like, 20,
yeah, then.
27, you know.
Okay, well, he might have thought you were the police.
Right. The way we
well,
look,
is your thing is your deal is a lot of metal, right?
Like on the podcast?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, it's a lot of it, you know, this is going to be episode 15. A lot of it, you know, I've had guys from, like, you know, everybody from like Five Finger Death Punch to Hatebreed to, you know, the drummer of Cinderella was on an episode. At this point, it's a lot of people that I've had dealings with in the past, and it's kind of uh-huh. trickling that, you know, now I can go and say, hey, I've had, you know, now I'll be able to say, hey, I've had the Reverend Horton Heat on, or I've had Chris from Five Finger Death Punch on, you know, just kind of getting myself in the door. But it's been fun so far.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
I just like to have interesting conversations, interesting people.
Yeah, well, that's cool, you know, because rockabilly guys, they like punk rockers.
Yeah.
And a lot of punk rock, too, but, you know, a lot of the rockabilly guitar players, you know, we have a lot of respect for metal guys because, you know, a lot of punk rock guys just kind of noodle around until they find some cool chord. And metal guys, man, they really have to get into their instrument to be able to play like that, you know, and so... That's very similar to rockabilly there. The rockabilly guys respect that, you know.
I can, so, you know, that's the one thing growing up in Nashville was, you know, you could always go see somebody great at a honky-tonk or, you know, just a little dive bar somewhere, and they're always just great musicians throughout the town. There's a great rockabilly band called Hillbilly Casino out of Nashville.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. No, we know those guys. Yeah. They're really great. Yeah.
You know, Jeff and those guys are just such amazing players. Yeah. Like, you know, they do their Van Halen covers and, you know, all that stuff. So, yeah, you just sit there. Just amazing.
They were doing Hot for Teacher. We played a gig for them. Yeah, they've been doing that for a while, I think.
Yeah, they've been around for a while.
Yeah, man, they're really good. Yep. Really good. Really energetic, too. You know, really entertaining.
Yeah, it's fun to watch. But yeah, you should watch this, you know, these like shredders on guitar playing rockabilly, you know, and it's such a great thing to see. You know, I think if you're going to make a great rockabilly band, you have to have just a great guitar player.
Yeah, man, I tell you what, that does help. But then again, too, you know, the stuff that I like, you know, I like to hear a guy that is, you can tell he's listened to a lot of those old records. You know, and a lot of the, not all those old records had guitar shredding like, you know, Gene Vincent had Cliff Gallup just going wild and stuff. A lot of them were very simplistic solos. So, you know, there's some guys, authentic players that, you know, play pretty simple, but, you know, man, that's kind of a style thing too. You know, they got that style so good that, you know, you can get out there and play rockabilly and not really have to go get shreddy at all. You can just kind of play two note chords and just kind of mimic the vocal melody on your solo a little bit, you know. So, but you know, that's kind of a style thing. But sure, man, there's some rockabilly bands that, you know, like when you go to see Big Sandy and the Flyright Boys, man, to sit there and watch Ashley Kingman just fly around the guitar, man, it's intense.
Yeah, I definitely have to check them out. So how do you feel about like the mid-90s, mid to late 90s? There was a little bit of like a rockabilly culture, but I think like now with like car shows and tattoo conventions and you know, just like I just see like a huge resurgence in like that whole style. Is that something you see too, or am I just like picking back up on it? Or
well, it's always kind of come and gone. Mm-hmm. And man, I tell you what, I have too much to think about than to watch. And you know, one of the advantages of being around and being an old fart like I am is that I've been through so many scene changes that, you know, I mean, the swing movement back in the 90s, it went out of style just when I was really glad it was back in style. So I'm like, oh man, you know, like, oh, the swing movement, that's dead. You know, it's like, oh really? Well, what's big now, you know?
Well, I think that's one nice thing about you guys is, you know, you guys weren't necessarily a grunge band, and you weren't a, you know, just a, you know, this or a new metal band or a rap metal band. You know,
we rip off everybody.
You know, it was, you know, it was your thing, and like, you know, you can created your own lane that way, and you know, you've persevered to this point, and it's nice, you know, nice to see good people still doing good things.
Well, thank you, man, I appreciate it. Well, we have persevered, and I appreciate you saying that, because that's a lot about Jimbo's story with me too. You know, Jimbo was very gung-ho to do a lot of gigs that maybe, you know, on the face you shouldn't have done, but at the end, you know, it was how we got our record deals and all that stuff, you know. Jimbo's gung-ho, man.
Yeah, I remember talking to him tons of times back, you know, back in my teenage days. Yeah, he talked to everybody, sign anything, you know. Such a good guy.
Oh, yeah, man. Jimbo's a great guy.
I had a question for you, man. I'll see, you know, we've talked about Johnny Cash. And growing up, actually, technically, I grew up in Hendersonville, Tennessee, which is, you know, obviously the home of Johnny Cash.
So, right, and it's kind of like the suburb that all the stars moved to back, right?
Yeah,
like
definitely.
In I'm not sure what that much of the history of the suburbs of Nashville, but yeah, a lot of people live out there. Yeah,
it was nice growing up around there, but I don't know if I've ever actually asked anyone this question, but with Johnny Cash, like in his just of a cult figure he is and how he's kind of the face of that era country. But it still baffles me that like someone like Waylon Jennings or any of those other guys from back then, you know, aren't still culturally relevant. You know, you can be a Misfits fan and love Johnny Cash, you know, it's almost like a. Do you know what that is? Do you know why he is such a legend?
Well, you know, he was. I think one reason is his songs are really true, and they're you know, a little bit bawdy. You know, mm-hmm. Folsom Prison Blues is kind of a bawdy type song, and you know, Johnny Cash, you know, he was living the life, and just a great guy. You know?
Yeah,
you know? It's hard to describe it, you know, totally, you know, just. But his music speaks to people, you know, Folsom Prison Blues. When I first heard that, I was in my cousin's car. It was during the Vietnam War. He had just got out of the jungle and bought this brand new Camaro with an 8-track player. And it was Johnny Cash playing, singing Folsom Prison Blues live.
Yeah.
And I heard, and then that whole tape that he had of him singing to those prisoners and hearing their reaction to the lyrics. You know, that's when I really discovered how important a lyric can be. You know, before that, it was all, you know, Billy, don't be a hero, or whatever. You know, I don't know whatever was on the radio back then at that time. You know, it's powerful. He was a powerful guy. You know, he said what needed to be said, and people appreciated that a lot.
Yeah, because he had like I shot a man just to watch him die kind of lyrics, but then he would release, you know, for every one of those, he released a gospel record, and, you know, and so he just
Yep. Well, that was, you know, a lot of the vintage country people, you know, they all did gospel albums. A lot of them, most of them were church going type people. So yeah, he's got some great gospel songs too. I love his gospel stuff.
Such a great voice.
I'm down at my studio today.
Okay,
go
cool.
Ahead.
No, I'll just wrap it up with a couple of quick questions then. And well, I'll throw out another Texas band to see if you have any connections with this. Did you guys ever have any dealings with Pantera back in the day?
Not really. They were kind of on a different wavelength from us because, well, the Reverend Horton Heat was really born out of the Deep Ellum scene.
Yeah.
And the Deep Ellum scene was alternative bands, but a lot of them were real young and willing basically to play for free, you know? And by the time that happened, Pantera they were still around. And I used to saw them, they were wearing spandex and stuff and all that, but
yeah.
But even back then, man, they were so good that they got gigs, man. So, you know, they were going to come play Deep Ellum for 100, 200 bucks or something. You know, they were making money. They've been a successful band for a long time. And so, and for that reason, I think they were probably not as big a part of the Deep Ellum scene, but man, we did have a great shredder metal band come out of that Deep Ellum scene. Rigor Mortis.
Oh yeah.
You know, and they played, and it was like, man, it was incredible. Mike Scascia was a ripping guitar player. Man, it was really sad he died. You know, he really died, right when they were making their. You know, they're trying to make a comeback with him on guitar because he left and played with the Ministry and all sorts of other people for a while. So, I kind of missed out on the Pantera thing, but because, you know, it wasn't really that long after that that they blew up and got so huge that, you know, when you're a giant rock band, you know, you're not coming down to Deep Ellum a lot watching a rockabilly guy.
Is Deep Ellum like Trees and all those places?
Well, no, the first club was Theater Gallery and the Twilight Room.
Okay.
Or the Twilight Room was before Theater Gallery. But anyway, playing those rooms, then playing the Prophet Bar, then they had Club Dada, then another place called Club Clearview came in. Then all of a sudden, a bunch of club venues came in trying to have local band or have bands play. And so it got really huge. It got to be a really great thing. I mean, you could go in the same 3-square block area, you could go see any type of live music, jazz to metal to rockabilly to country to funk to all of that. And a lot of alternative original bands kind of were the ones that were the most popular, you know. It was kind of crazy.
That's awesome.
Good time. It was a good time, yeah.
So what's going on with the band right now? Are you guys recording, touring, future plans?
Well, I've kind of been trying to stay in my little studio pretty much all the time when we're not on tour, at least not all the time, but I try to come up here every day and work on some stuff here and there. And then, you know, we leave on trips all the time. We tour all, you know, kind of all the time. We're out and back. It ends up being we're out about a third of the time. So it's pretty nice.
Nice.
But we're leaving to a California 3-week trip starting Friday. We're going to be busy. We're doing that. We're doing another tour starting in the middle of January.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Well, everybody would definitely be looking forward to that. And once again, just thanks for coming on the podcast. Such a legendary person, and such an honor to have you on.
Oh, man, you're too nice. Well, I appreciate you having me.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take it easy.
Bye.
Okay, man. Thanks. Bye-bye.
And there you have it, guys. The Reverend Horton Heat on the podcast. With this being my special Thanksgiving episode, I'm going to play a song right now by the Reverend Horton Heat. It's called Eat Steak. It goes along with Thanksgiving. So if on Thursday you don't have some turkey, eat a steak. And check this song out. I'll see you guys momentarily.
Cowpokes will come from the near and far when you throw a few ribeyes on the farm. Roberta Duran ate 2 before 5 cause it gives a mighty man an awful lot of mighty mind. Eat steak, eat a big old steer. Eat steak, do we have one deer? Eat beef, it's a mighty good food. It's a great A meal when I'm in the mood. Eat meat, filet mignon. Eat meat, eat it all day long. Bones till you get your fill, eat a New York cut, hot off the grill. Eat steak, eat a big old steer. Eat steak, do we have one deer? Eat beef, it's a mighty good food. It's a great A meal when I'm in the mood. Eat a cow, cause it's good for you. Eat a cow, it's a thing that goes moo. Cows in the slaughterhouse yard, gotta hit them in the head, gotta hit them real hard. First you gotta clean it, then the butcher cuts it up, throws it on a scale, throws an eyeball in a cup. Saw a big brave steer standing right over there, so I rustled up a fire, cooked a medium rare. Barbecued his brisket, roasted his rump, fed my dogs with a brave steer's hump. Eat steak, eat a big old steer. Eat steak, do we have one deer? It's a mighty good food. It's a great A meal when I'm in the mood.
All right, guys, that's it for this week. Thanks for listening. It's a short episode this week. The Reverend Horton, he didn't have a whole lot of time, so I just got what I could get. Like always, unsigned bands, hit me up at talktometalk@gmail.com. Love to play in the podcast at talktometalk on the Twitter, facebook.com/talktometalk. Please let me know what you're thinking about the podcast. If you can, go to iTunes, rate and review the podcast. Also, a big thank you to Lynn Owsley for allowing me to put the track on here. Don't forget, this Wednesday, November 25th, check me out on Thrifty Business with Jay and Nay. 9 o'clock Eastern on the YouTube, on their YouTube channel. Search it out, check it out. Let everybody know about Talk To Me. Help me out, help the podcast out. It's going to be a lot of fun. Got a lot of great guests coming up. So until next week, I hope you guys have a great week. Have a happy Thanksgiving. Eat a turkey.